NPR station.
WMNF's Sunday Forum. Join us as we present the film, What is Democracy? What is Democracy? Raises critical questions and challenges our establishment and notions of democracy and freedom. The film highlights some of the greatest political thinkers of our time. So join us on Thursday, October 24th at 7 p.m. at WMNF Studios. Get your tickets now for $7. For more information, go to WMNF.org.
WMNF's Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. We're also streaming live on WMNF.org and on Facebook.com/WMNF News. I'm Sean Canaan. Today we'll speak with an environmentalist about an upcoming Florida Department of Environmental Protection open house public meeting. It's about Mosaic's proposed discharge of wastewater into the Peace River and other rivers. Later on in the show, we'll take calls with your questions. 813-239-9663 is the number to call in. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. The Peace River begins in Polk County. It flows generally southwest through much of the center of Florida until it empties into Charlotte Harbor near Port Charlotte in southwest Florida. And Mosaic is asking for a renewal permit for its Bartow Chemical Plant through the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. That's the initials are NPDES. The Florida Department of Environmental Protection open house public meeting is next Monday, the 30th, from 4 in the afternoon until 7 at Mulberry Civic Center. That's at 901 Northeast 5th Street in Mulberry. And I reached out to Mosaic late last week to invite them on the show, but they don't have anyone available for today's show. We do have a guest in the studio, and it's Andy Melle. And Andy, are you still with Suncoast Waterkeepers?
Yep. Yes.
All right, Suncoast Waterkeepers. So I want to welcome you back to WMNF's Midpoint, Andy.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. Let's start with, first of all, what is Mosaic?
The Mosaic many of us know is a soft and fuzzy, environmentally responsible entity with no visible means of support that does something called reclamation ecology. That's what you hear on their ads all the time. They're proclaiming their stewardship of the land and their restoration ecology. In fact, they are in the business of mining. They are mining the heart of Florida in the most destructive manner possible. They're strip mining it. They're gouging it out to 60, 70 feet deep on a landscape scale. Over 800 square miles have been mined and dug up and backfilled to remove the levels of phosphate. There's basically, on the land that's been reclaimed, as is required by law, there's essentially nothing living except a few blades of grass, a couple of shrubs. I remember one midnight, early morning ride across that territory, southern Polk County, maybe northern Hardy into Manatee County through a whole bunch of mines. And it was the dead of night. I had just finished dropping off some people near Mulberry, where there had been, we'd watched the New Wales factory, the fertilizer plant, in the dead of night with smoke and stuff belching out of the stacks. They were letting everything rip because it was night and it was late night and nobody was watching. So everything was getting, pushed out through the stacks. And the city, the town itself was awash in this fog. It was like London back in the days of the coal burning era, the days of Charles Dickens, And so I got out there and finally I realized, there's not a single animal. There's no roadkill. There's nothing. I'm just going to let it rip. So, I just cranked at my foot to the floor, drove through this country at 110 miles an hour and didn't see an animal the whole entire time. It's just a dead land. And that's what Mosaic gives you. They claim to do jobs. They claim they essentially, a new mine creates no new jobs. They claim to be an economic boon to the state. All the money, because it's a publicly traded company, the money leaves the state, goes off to shareholders. It's a con. We have been, as a state, absolutely conned into giving away our land. Thousands of sustainable agricultural jobs are gone forever, and it's not a good thing, in case you're wondering what I think. So how does it work? First of all, they do core samples. They figure out where the phosphate deposits are. They're closer to the surface north, which is why Polk and Hillsboro have been so extensively mined. And this stuff gets deeper and deeper and deeper and of a lower quality as you go south, which is why DeSoto County was the last county on their list, where we fought them bitterly at the county line and actually held them at bay. It was a historic battle. The county did not give them the rezone they requested. So the first thing they do is they mine with these gigantic drag lines, which have booms as long as a football field. They're astonishing to watch. Then the material gets blasted with high pressure water jets to break it down into small enough pieces to be piped as a slurry to a beneficiation plant, which was also called a float plant. There, this product gets put into tanks of reagent. Reagent is filled with surfactants, waste fuel oils, lots and lots of fuel oil, and also some mysterious stuff called amines. The amines are mostly synthetic. Mosaic's not required to tell anybody. They refuse to tell anybody what's in these reagent fluids. Anyhow, the reagent fluids, when they get clogged with sediment, they get pumped up into something called a clay settling area. The materials settle out there. For the ages, these things are 60 feet down in the ground, and they're inside berms that are 60 feet high, and they settle out over the years, and over the course of the lifetime of a mine, which is 15 to 30 years, these things will gradually fill up with this clay-like material. It takes 50 years for that stuff to set up. There's photographs of heavy machinery just glunk, getting sucked down into these things. They breach periodically, and when they breach a notorious breach, there were two actually on the Peace River in the 70s, the early 70s, the Peace River turned a milky white, and everything in it died. So this is the kind of, right now we have a strange foamy material coming down the Peace River all the way from Bartow, from one of these clay settling areas. It's coming all the way. There's an outfall that's creating this foam. But the thing is, it doesn't dissipate. It's maintaining its physical configuration all the way down 60, 70, 80 miles of the Peace River into the Peace River estuary and out towards Boca Grande. And it's this stuff. I'm having the stuff analyzed. Nobody knows what's in it. I've written to the FDEP, and they haven't been able to tell me either. So after the stuff is separated, you get a higher quality ore. The waste goes up onto these clay settling areas. The high quality ore nowadays, because they're mining in Hardy and Manatee counties, which don't want gyp stacks and don't want the chemical plants, the fertilizer plants, it goes up to, ta-da, Hillsboro, and also Polk counties, where the two biggest, most active fertilizer plants are. There's Riverview here. So if your listeners are living in the vicinity of Riverview, good luck to you, and also New Wales, two very large fertilizer plants. There's a smaller one in Bartow. What's done there? These are the people who work there call them acid plants because that's what they make, that's what they use. They make their own sulfuric acid. They expose the ore to the sulfuric acid. What comes out is phosphoric acid. That's the finished product. That's what gets turned into fertilizers and things like that. In the course of that, they make waste phosphogypsum. And the phosphogypsum is created at a rate of 5 to 1, 5 tons of phosphogypsum to every ton of product. And so that stuff is radioactive, and the EPA has declared that it has to go up on these phosphogypsum stacks or mountains. We call them gyp stacks for short. That's actually the industry's term for them. And they loom 200 feet tall. There's two of them over in Riverview. You can see them from I-75. You can see them certainly from 41, State Route 41.
You can see them from St. Petersburg, I think.
You can see them from St. Petersburg. One is right on the edge of the bay, and I just keep thinking with sea level rise, one good storm is just going to eat away into the flanks of that thing, and it's just going to collapse into the bay, and then we're going to have to deal with that. Back in they're full of radioactive waste. Back in the day, up till about the 80s, they used to have a station in the process after they were done making the phosphoric acid, where they would strip out the uranium 238, and then they would send it up onto the gypsack. Nowadays, with yellow cake from places like Nigeria being much more competitive, they don't do that anymore. So all the uranium's going up onto our gypsacks, where it is just building up and building up and building up, creating a toxic legacy for the state of Florida. Now, in the middle of all this, there's about 20 certifiable toxic substances listed on the EPA's toxic release inventory, things like mercury, vanadium, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, zinc, uranium, radium, thorium, strontium. Strontium's a good one. It goes into your bone tissue and gives you bone cancer. Chromium, ammonium nitrate, things like that. It's they're not a good neighbor, not a good neighbor to have at all. And the stuff on top of the gypsacks, the gypsacks are built because they form a lake inside a berm around the top of this thing. The process water from the factory goes up there when it's, again, full of sediment, when it's jammed up, and they send it up there. The stuff settles out, and that's how the stack gets higher and higher and higher. That material is as acidic as battery acid. It burns holes in people's flesh if it drops onto their body. I've met people who worked up on the top on the loaders and things like that are constantly up there maintaining the berm and everything like that. These things are constantly trying to breach, constantly cracking from shrinkage, constantly seeping, constantly leaking. The whole entire mountain is saturated with this acidic material, and it eventually, goes into the groundwater. And when it goes down into the ground, it encounters the karst limestone that underlies this whole area, and it reacts with the limestone the way vinegar would react with baking soda, with a sort of an explosive kind of reaction. That's how sinkholes are formed. You get a cavern that gets larger and larger and larger and larger and larger until it is large enough that it can no longer support the weight of all the stuff above it, and everything collapses down into it.
And we saw a sinkhole like that on one of these gypsacks just a few years ago. I think it was 2016 over yes. at the New Wales plant.
Yep.
And I have some audio of then Governor Rick Scott describing what he saw when he flew over the gypsack. So maybe we should play that audio right now.
Sure.
And we'll talk a little bit more about this, the sinkhole that formed there where 200 million or so gallons of waste went into the drinking water aquifer. But let's hear how then Governor, now Senator Rick Scott, described what he saw at this gypsack where the sinkhole was.
Here's what they said. I'll tell you what it looks like, and then see what they said. It looks like, so the way it was explained to me, there's these layers. Okay, they have this. I guess it's a polyurethane layer that's supposed to hold.
A liner
is supposed to hold. And so he said that was breached, but it's just like they think it's a total of possibly, and the biggest is maximum is 45 feet, which is 15 yards, I guess, or about 15 yards wide. But what you see is if you've ever been to the beach where you see water just draining down into the sand, that's what it looks like. It looks like just it's all messed up. But you can see seepage. They explained to me that they'll continue to seep because they've pumped out all the water they could. The gypsum that surrounds it has moisture in that, so that'll continue to have some seepage there. And then if it rains, they'll have some others. But the other thing they explained, that which was interesting, is the flow of the water. But what they're doing is, they've got a lot of wells all around here to test, but they're also adding more wells around just to make sure that they can continue to test. And they said they're about 2.5 miles away from their closest property owner, where the water would flow. But they also have wells on the opposite. If they're wrong, they got wells over there too.
Well, that was then Governor Rick Scott speaking in 2016 after he toured the massive Mosaic sinkhole in. I think that's in Polk County, right near the Hillsborough County line. It's called the New Wales Plant. And he was describing, how they were trying to plug the hole. Eventually, they did get that sinkhole plugged. And our guest is is Andy Mele from the Suncoast Waterkeepers. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:20 in the afternoon, and we're also streaming live on Facebook Live on the WMNF News page. And we're talking about the Mosaic is applying for a renewal permit for its Bartow Chemical Plant through the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. And next Monday at 4 in the afternoon, beginning at 4 at the Mulberry Civic Center, there is an open house public meeting about their application. And so we're talking to Andy Mele, but we're also going to take some of your calls, 813-239-9663. Why don't we take a call from someone who's been holding a while? We have some people on the line, but let's hear first from David in Tampa. Hi, David. What would you like to ask?
Oh, hey, Sean. One thing I don't think is well known with Mosaic is that the hourly employees there are pretty heavily invested in labor unions. And I was curious if your guests could speak about whether there's ever been kind of pressure on the union to make Mosaic do the right thing and be a better environmentally friendly company.
The answer to that is no, I'm unaware of any such activities. It's a very closed society. The union is not a high profile player. My guess is it's one of those sort of nominal unions. I don't have an answer to that. I'll have to get back to you.
All right. Thank you for that question, David. I think, since we have a few people on the line, let's try to take one more. And Linda, you're on in Bradenton. What would you like to say? Go ahead, Linda. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks. I'm sitting here in my car. My blood pressure is going up and up and up, so I thought, I'll call and add a comment. I just wanted to say I've been to quite a few of the Manatee County Commission meetings every time a Mosaic issue would come up, and there's just a couple that are recurring. You know, what Mr. Millay said before about the whole eastern part of Manatee County, it's just becoming a wasteland. And one of the ironic things at one of the last meetings I went to, they were talking about the radioactive dust that settles everywhere after a real intense mining session. And the Mosaic people had the audacity to stand up and say they only registered 5 windy days in Manatee County. Well, if you play golf or tennis, you know there are a heck of a lot more than 5 windy days in Manatee County. Another thing was that one of the hearings I went to, they were applying for an increase in their water allowance. They wanted 800 million gallons more a day to process phosphate, process the oil. And I just, as a preschool teacher, I said, Jameen, you're going to tell me to tell my kids to turn the water off when they're brushing their teeth, and you're going to take 800 million gallons more for your private concern? Another thing is, somebody's mentioned a couple alternatives for farming out there, olives and blueberries and organic farming. It still can be reclaimed from the land barons who just go in and take and leave you with a big mess. So that's one thing I never hear about, and I wish the more people would come forth. Also, I know they pose a hazard to the Manatee River watershed. If you're not worried about drinking water in Florida, you've got to start reading and listening to people who know something about it. It just drives me crazy.
Linda, also, guess what? The Manatee River is one of the rivers that starts in the middle of the mined territories. The headwaters have been dug up, thrown away, and reconstituted. The Peace River is also from up there. The Alafaya River is from up there. The Little Manatee and the Myakka, which becomes a wild and scenic river. The Peace River is a major, major drinking water source, as is the Alafaya. 36% of the Tampa area's drinking water comes from surface waters. So this is just an astonishing thing that they're allowed to just, you know, the subject of this show right now is the outfalls 001, 002 from the Bartow Chemical Plant, which are going to go one into the Alafaya, one into the Peace River, both of which are going to be, we're going to be drinking them before long. We're drinking them right now.
Just one other thing I wanted to add too is when you look at how many hurricanes we have, that's an understatement, but you know, enough storms that why you would hazard all of Florida and all its natural resources for big business like that is just beyond me. I'm done. I'll turn it back to the experts. I'm glad to hear it come to the forefront like this.
Linda, thanks so much for your call. So, Andy, we heard about the questions that she had about that. We also have an emailer who is asking to explain what your organization is. So what is the Suncoast Waterkeepers?
Suncoast Waterkeeper is part of the International Waterkeeper Alliance. The Waterkeeper Alliance is some 350 groups like ours worldwide. And I'm particularly proud to say that they're indigenous. That when they're in Africa, it's Africans. So in China, in Iraq, there's Arabs are the water keepers. It's a great organization. We are small but mighty. We have, everybody was concerned about the red tide a year ago. We sued the city of St. Pete. And we sued Gulfport, and we recently sued Sarasota County over sewage emissions, sewage discharges, illegal violations of the Clean Water Act. And in all three cases, we won settlements, and we are going to be removing, billions of gallons of wastewater from the coastal environment. We are dedicated to the coastal environment and keeping the coastal environment healthy. My concern with phosphate mining and also with development leads is because that is the that's the watershed of our estuaries and our coast, and it comes down into it drains into Tampa Bay, drains down into the Peace River estuary, and all points in between. So these are, critical watershed-based functions of a science-driven organization.
How can people get in touch with the Suncoast Waterkeeper?
Our website, suncoastwaterkeeper.org or .com. We'll do it. We also have a pretty good Facebook page. The website does not have anything on phosphate right now. I have been struggling mightily. In some cases, you can just, too much. I can't prioritize what needs to go into the thing. I'm working on it. Within a few weeks, we'll have a really good phosphate section in the website. But it covers everything else that we do, which is formidable. There's a good website called 3PR. Just Google 3P, the numeral 3PR, and that'll take you to a website of a group called People Protecting Peace River. They've been investing a lot in their website, and it's a really good presence, and it's very informative on this issue.
3PR. Our guest is Andy Melee with Suncoast Waterkeepers, and you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. It's 12:28 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan, and you're listening to Midpoint Monday, and I want to give out the phone number again because there is an open line, 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org, text 813-433-0885. We're talking about mosaic phosphate and phosphate mining in the state of Florida, and of course, for people who don't know, Florida is one of the main sources in the world for phosphate, which is eventually used as a fertilizer in the farms around the world and in the non-organic farms in the world. A lot of people are saying maybe an alternative to this would be to have more organic farming, small-scale farming. What would be a solution to, hey, why do we need to mine for phosphate and destroy the wildlands of Florida?
Phosphate is a fertilizer in something called factory farming. It's where it started in the late 50s, early 60s with the Green Revolution. Somebody's bright idea was to take industrial practices and apply them to agriculture. What's happened, unfortunately, is that over the years, the soil has been stripped of nutrients, stripped of much of anything, of minerals. And so it has to have all that stuff constantly reapplied and reapplied and reapplied every year in order to grow crops. Most of the crops grown from industrial agriculture go to feed animals. Very little of it, relatively little of it, actually goes to directly into our mouths. So that said, The solution is regenerative agriculture. It's a little bit of organic. It's a little bit of traditional. It's a little bit of just sort of backyard common sense. The UN is researching it and promoting it. It appears to be scalable to huge 1,000-acre farms and backyards. It appears to be completely utilitarian in that sense. And the sort of the operative statistic to for people to take away, and if you don't take away anything from this, but this, just remember this one thing: 25% of the world's farms are small traditional family farms, and they feed more than 65% of the people on this planet. So industrial agriculture is not efficient. It's causing enormous environmental harm. The nutrients are not being recycled or retained on top of the soil. They're running off, blowing off and running off. They're creating, there's something like 400 anoxic zones in oceans and lakes and bays around the world right now. They're also called dead zones. That's our sort of term of art for them. The one at the mouth of the Mississippi River is now the size of Connecticut. Last year it was the size of New Jersey. I don't know if that's bigger or smaller, but I mean, it's just, it's a bad thing. And, as for phosphate and markets, I have a bone to pick with that too. I mean, it's just, there's just nothing to like in this whole business. What's happening right now is we are, in a race to the bottom to dig up every last drop of phosphate and sell it. Right? At market prices. Market prices go up and down, they fluctuate and everything like that, but it's market prices. Thing to remember. In 30 years, there's going to be no phosphate left. You know, a lot of people say, well, it's only 30 years. Why don't you just let them have it all and just go away? Well, you know, it's not as easy as that. So in 30 years, we're going to be buying phosphate from countries like, if we don't make changes, from China. From Morocco, there's far more. Morocco has like 70% of the world's reserves, and the companies that mine there are worse than Mosaic, and I'm sure Mosaic is one of the players. There's phosphate in Peru, phosphate in Brazil. It's all over the place. We're going to be price takers. That's an economics term for when you don't no longer have a choice. There's no longer you don't have a market. I mean, the only market would be, if Brazil wants to compete with Morocco or something like that to keep the price down. But basically, we'll be sitting here bereft of this natural resource because we sold every bit of it out to please, our Fortune 500 company that was just destroying the heartland of Florida, and we'll be paying arguably much more for that resource. It makes no sense.
Our guest is Andy Maley, and we're talking about Mosaic and phosphate mining, and he's with Suncoast Waterkeepers here on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. And the number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can also send us a text at 813-433-0885. Let me read through a couple of these emails. We're getting a lot of emails. It says, can your guest discuss the Vadose zone, V-A-D-O-S-E zone, and what the local mining means in this regard, especially in the context of drinking water? Are you familiar with that term? I'm not. David writes.
That's the vertical mixing zone that these emissions are going into. They talk about a horizontal zone and a vertical zone. It's actually DOZ, I believe.
Okay.
And so the vertical mixing zone is the one of greatest interest. The horizontal zone is just basically where they have like 800 or 900 acres around a chemical plant, and they can just dump the crap on the ground, and as long as it stays within that zone, they're legal. What they're doing also is injecting it down, and they're injecting it down into the two upper aquifers, the surficial aquifer, which is anywhere from 6 to 20 feet below the surface, and also into the intermediate aquifer, which is 60, 80, 100, 120 feet down, and that is the water that most people with wells drink from. Most wells go down till they hit a reliable source. So it's usually the intermediate aquifer. There's an upper and lower intermediate aquifer, blah, blah, blah. But I think that's just diabolical because that's like injecting this stuff directly into people's households. I have a friend in Lithia who before the sinkhole was even publicly announced, was finding that her water, smelled just overpoweringly of kerosene and turpentine. She was trying to take a shower one day, and it got so bad she started retching and had to get out of the shower for fear of, you know, causing injury to herself. That's because they're able to inject their toxic and hazardous waste into other people's drinking water without any interference from the FDEP. The thing that amazes me is how the FDEP, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, is the handmaiden to Mosaic throughout all this. They are ostensibly sitting up there at these outfalls, the outfalls that the public hearing is about, with clipboards, while Mosaic, dilutes the toxic waste and dilutes it and dilutes it and dilutes it, using millions and millions of gallons a day to do that until it meets some sort of numeric criteria, and then they're allowed to let it go legally. The same quantity of toxic waste as before, just diluted.
Diluted with more drinking
water.
Exactly.
It goes down into the ditches and these little streams, streams without even names, and runs down to the, in this particular case, the Alafaya and the Peace River.
And this is the permit that we're talking about, that there's a hearing about, or not a hearing, it's an open house public meeting about this next Monday from 4 in the afternoon until 7 at Mulberry Civic Center at 901 Northeast 5th Street. Mosaic is asking for a renewal permit for its Bartow Chemical Plant through the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. And the meeting is hosted by the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. There's an open house next Monday. And what is Mosaic asking for? What does this permit permit it to do?
Well, actually, they're asking for renewal permits on two industrial waste outfalls. They're called D001 and D002. The 001 outfall drains off to the west toward the Alafaya, and the D002 drains off to the east and goes into the Peace River. There's also a third outfall, which is internal on their property. Nobody's ever seen it. Nobody's been to it. And nobody knows what comes out of it, which is equally astonishing. These NPDES permits, National Pollution Discharge Elimination System, which has barely even minimized people's discharges, certainly not, hasn't eliminated a single, point of pollution that I'm aware of anywhere in the country. But it's that they have to be renewed every 5 years, and they have to demonstrate best available technology. And to the best of my knowledge, that's going to be the hook for anybody. The problem is that for anybody who wants to challenge those permits, the problem is I have some experience. The New York State DEC used to just give the Indian Point Atomic Energy Facility just renew their permits just by signing off on them, giving them extensions and variances and allowances. So over like 20 years, there had been no renewals, no real true renewals, and we sued. And it was a once-through cooling system. It was the most outdated, most primitive cooling system of all. And we won. But big companies have a tremendous amount of leverage. And to the best of my knowledge, they still have not re-engineered that cooling system, 7 or 8 years later. You have to curb your expectations. If anybody... we all knew pretty well what, once through cooling is. It's pretty simple. It's pumps and pipes. But what's the stuff that Mosaic is doing in there? Nobody gets to go in to see what Mosaic does. Mosaic will come out there with armed guards. They will arrest you, and they will take you to the sheriff's. Or even better, the sheriff will come and arrest you. They're again, our state and county agencies are being the handmaidens doing the business of this corporate polluter.
And they're asking to be able to continue to discharge about 300 million gallons a day of mostly water, but also these pollutants.
3 million. 3 million a day. 3 million gallons.
Sorry, did I say that? Wow, I was off by a lot. 3 yeah. million gallons a day into yeah. the Alafaya, but also into mostly, we're talking about into the Peace River.
Mostly, like one-third of a million, probably roughly 300,000 gallons a day into the Alafaya, and the rest into the Peace. Yeah.
There's been, let me talk about the Peace River for a second. Back in the 70s, I'm looking at a microfiche of a newspaper article from the 70s that talks about a phosphate spill in Polk County in December of 1971, where more than 3 million fish were killed. 90% of the fish were killed in that one area. And this is from 1 billion gallons of phosphate sludge entering into the Peace River because a sludge pool retention dike broke. And that's kind of the settling ponds that you were talking about earlier.
Settling pond. What year is that? 70.
This was 1971.
That's a clay settling area breach. There was also in 96 a breach of the acidic lake on top of a gyp stack in right nearby near Mulberry and Bartow, and this thing let go and went down into the Alifier. The Tampa Bay Times writer at the time said, and it's pretty much a quote, the Alifier River was deader than a sewer pipe. It was dead. It was stone dead. Nothing lived. It got out into Hillsborough Bay and killed millions of fish out there. This, you know, went in through communities. I can't find any record of, you know, highly acidic flooding in a few communities that were in the way. It's like that information has been squashed. You know, General Electric, back in the day when I was fighting them, they used to buy people's properties in Hudson Falls and Fort Edward, the two towns where the PCBs had been dumped. They bought almost every house in town and swore as part of the covenant for, you know, selling, because they couldn't sell their homes to anybody on the open market. Part of the contract was that they had to be silent about this for good. And none of them would ever talk to us because they'd be in violation of the contract and GE would come get them. I don't know if stuff like that is going on with Mosaic or not. It's just like there's only so many of us to go around. This is there's so much geography involved, so many different forms of pollution, so many different approaches, vectors of hazardous materials. You know, like, you know, think about this enormous lake of acid water, water with the pH of battery acid, in Riverview, sitting right outside the old Gardiner plant. And you have within 3/4 of a mile, you have Progress Village, you have schools, you have factories, you have that stuff is evaporating. It's up there in the top to evaporate, and as it evaporates, it's bringing that low pH with it. And so, you know, I've heard complaints from people in Progress Village and villages of Bloomingdale and other communities that the paint on their cars becomes etched and faded. They get, you know, etching on their glass, their window glass. Curiously enough, their batteries go dead rapidly. I don't know where that comes from, but, anyhow, it's, you know, and there's, of course, you know, legions of health problems in those areas, whether it comes from the acid, COPD is rampant. You've got bone cancer all over the so-called Bone Valley, which is the area where that's being mined. You've got varieties of other cancers. You have whole families with cancer. You have households where the horse has cancer and one of the family members has cancer. There's no, you know, the horse didn't smoke cigarettes. The horse is not genetically linked to the humans. There's one family where the spouse contracted pancreatic cancer. I think she's still with us. And the dog contracted pancreatic cancer. And it's just like, and they're all drinking the same water. So
our guest is Andy Maley with the Suncoast Waterkeepers. We're talking about phosphate mining in West Florida, and our number here is 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:44 in the afternoon. I want to play, in just a second, I'm going to play an audio from one of the residents nearby this gypsum stack that collapsed into a sinkhole. But first of all, this is someone whose email says, I drove up to Bock Tower Saturday and was appalled at what I saw along 60. We must get this out to the public. So before we hear from the resident, what would, if you drive along 60 from Brandon to Bock Tower in the center of the state, what would you see? You'll see mountains in an otherwise flat landscape. What are
yes,
those mountains?
Yes, they're gypsum stacks. They're phosphogypsum stacks. They're big ones, short ones, long ones, tall ones. And and they're all over. There are 24 of them, all told, in our state. Most of them, all but I think two, right in the Bone Valley, predominantly in that area of Polk County. Polk County, they say, is pretty much mined out. They're actually getting around to re-mining at the south end of the state. Now, there's a South Fort Meade mine that is being re-mined. Some people down there have been talking to us about, you know, the pumps and then things humming and crashing and clashing all night long, lights going and everything like that. And this is, you know, a county that was supposedly mined out. Polk County also has a rather desperate water crisis going on. They're running short of water. And so that's why they sued the Peace River Water Authority down near south of Arcadia over its plans to increase its storage. Now, I don't understand how downstream storage can actually affect upstream, but I think it had to do with the allowable maximum amounts of water that could be taken out of the Peace River. They're approaching a settlement right now, so that's a good thing. You know, I want to go back to those outfalls for just a second, if I may. What's coming out of them is these toxic I talked about toxics, but there's a couple things you might not expect. There's cyanobacteria. We've heard a lot about cyanobacteria. It turns out that cyanobacteria is used extensively by Mosaic in EPA-approved bioremediation techniques, where if you've got a lot of heavy metals, or if you've got a lot of radionuclides in your waste, you just put it into tanks of cyanobacteria, and it becomes absorbed by the bacteria. The background count, it's somehow that, because the stuff, gross alpha, the sorts of radionuclides, uranium, radium, the things that are the alpha emitters, so-called, they don't penetrate much of anything. They won't penetrate a piece of paper. If you get them directly into you and you ingest them, they will wreak havoc with you, which is why the wells are such a problem. But once it gets taken into the cellular tissue of the cyanobacteria, it won't read on a Geiger counter. So Mosaic gets to push this stuff downstream, swimming with radioactive cyanobacteria, blue-green algae, into the same water bodies that run down to our estuaries, where this stuff has created such a problem with red tide and other harmful algae blooms. The other thing is that Mosaic is using municipal wastewater in its clay settling areas, and I believe in its chemical processing as well. I have yet to actually confirm that, but they're taking a lot. They have deals, like for instance with Fort Meade, to use their wastewater, lots of it, and it goes up into the chemical plant and disappears from sight. To all of a sudden just resurface when it's being discharged, full of pathogens, pharmaceuticals, and things of that sort that come along with water from wastewater treatment plants. They're buying what they're buying, basically, or taking is partially reclaimed wastewater, and then they're loading it up with other stuff, and I the towns are, the municipalities are thrilled to get rid of the stuff. And then it just, it winds up in the Peace River and the Alafaya and all the other rivers at the end of the day.
Our guest is Andy Mele with Suncoast Waterkeepers. And I've been telling you I was going to play some tape that I interviewed of someone near the Fort Meade power plant where, this gypsum stack, which was the, this is where the sinkhole was, about 200 million gallons of water went down into the aquifer. And so people nearby have their wells. And so here was a resident, her name is Luella Phillips, and she lives near that sinkhole. In 2016, I interviewed her. She said her well was polluted.
A couple of weeks before the sinkhole was announced, my 8-year-old daughter was in the bathtub. She called me in there. I said, "Mama Lou, look at the water." I looked at the water. I thought she did her business in it. She's 8 years old. And then I thought it was rust, but it wasn't. I don't know what it was. I don't know if I've hurt her. We drank it for 2 to 3 weeks before they ever announced it. We took baths in it. We washed our clothes in it. All three kids have been sick ever since.
Well, that was Luella Phillips. She was a resident I interviewed near the sinkhole in 2016, and there was the major sinkhole, which they eventually plugged. That was when Rick Scott was there. He was talking about how they were plugging the sinkhole, and how did that ever end up? How much of this gypsum stack water went down into the drinking water aquifer, and how did they plug it up?
Well, they plugged it up with concrete. They call it grout, some sort of special super zoom concrete, but it took them a year and a half to do it. It took them a really long time. I think they just got it done maybe 6-8 months ago. We've been flying over it pretty regularly, checking on the progress of it. It was, you know, there would be, you know, they'd get it partially filled up, then it would collapse some more, and then they'd fill it up some more, and it would collapse some more. Plus, they've had their hands full with external cracking on several of the gyp stacks. And you know, these are all earthwork things. The phosphogypsum doesn't have any particular cohesiveness. It's just, you know, it's just all these things are accidents waiting to happen. 225 million gallons is the official number. They called it slightly radioactive water. But I'm here to tell you that the level of radioactivity in gyp stack water, you can't even call it water. It's fluid. Is 50 times natural levels of radium and uranium. It's 50 times greater than what is dug up out of the ground. And furthermore, what's dug up out of the ground was very comfortably out of the way. It's stuff that was not posing a threat to humankind of any way, shape, or form, because, again, the alpha emitters can't penetrate a piece of paper. So now all of a sudden it's been dug up, mixed up. It's in the backfill. These lands are radioactive. They give leases, grazing leases, because grass will grow on this, you know, nutrient poor stuff. Grass will grow eventually, and then they lease it out to the ranchers with their cattle. And after 6 months, they have to be rotated off because their teeth begin to fall out. So it's just something to behold. Now, I want to talk for a second. I guess I have a couple of minutes. I'll keep it brief. The big claim at the time was that you heard Rick Scott talk about the monitoring wells, and they were claiming that they were pumping the stuff out and getting rid of it, so they're keeping it under the site. It stayed under the site. Well, you know, there's a strong flow in groundwater from east to west and northeast to southwest through that area. Karst limestone is known for being riddled with caverns, rivers, holes, pores. Water can flow through it slowly. It can flow through it rapidly. Dye tests have shown an astonishingly rapid rate of flow from, for instance, from the tops of some of these gyp stacks out, like showing up into, they did a dye test, I think, in the old stack at Riverview. And it showed up, you know, it popped up in Hillsborough Bay 15 minutes later. So this is, you know, to say that they kept it under, that the 215 million gallons of radioactive water was generous enough to stay conveniently underneath that gyp stack is just a farce. It's completely farcical. That stuff was gone. It was out of town. It was gone in 60 seconds, like the movie. It was gone. And before they even noticed that this was happening, that stuff was out and gone. And Lithia Springs, a popular swimming hole up there, it turned into a foaming brown mess that smelled like turpentine and kerosene. The same thing as Christy Simpson's house. It's also headed down for Lake Manatee. You just do a simple analysis of where water goes vis-a-vis what the sort of the contour lines of the underground water pressure are, and it goes downhill, like rolling marble down a mountainside. It's headed down that way. And there are starting to be reports of extensive cancers in the vicinity of Lake Manatee, which is, of course, a big water supply for Manatee County. So we're going to do some more sampling down there and see if we can, you know, figure it out.
Our guest is Andy Mele with Suncoast Waterkeepers, and my name is Sean Canan. I'm the host of WMNF Tampa's Midpoint Monday. It's 12:55 in the afternoon. We've been having people hold for a really long time, so let me take a couple of phone calls. Frank in Largo, you're on the air.
All right. Hey, Andy, thanks for being on and informing us about the latest with Mosaic, which I consider public enemy number one for the people of Florida. We've been fighting them for a long time. George C. Glasser outlined this in his paper, Fluoride and the Phosphate Connection. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is what they add to the public drinking water. And they call it fluoride and says it's good for our teeth, but it's none of that. It's not pharmaceutical grade. It's not applied topically. It's pretty bad stuff. And, yeah, these gypsum stacks are just ticking time bombs waiting to happen.
All right. Thank you, Frank. Any thoughts on that?
Sure. It used to be that the areas around the fertilizer plants were just dead zones. Trees were dead and everything. You know, cattle were dropping dead, literally. That was from fluoride emissions from the fertilizer plants. Nowadays, they require stack scrubbers. So they got stack scrubbers in there. And every once in a while, they'll, you know, a tank truck will drive up there and they'll empty out the stack scrubbers, you know, tanks. And that's fluorosilicic acid, goes into the tank trucks and goes off unprocessed, just like it comes out of the stacks, and goes off to your water treatment plant and goes into your water supply. You know, it's astonishing, and Mosaic gets off the hook for millions of dollars of toxic waste remediation. It is arguably the most toxic stuff that comes out of those plants, and we're drinking it. Again, we're drinking their stuff for them, you know, every way around, you know, from the groundwater, from the river water, the surface waters, and from our, you know, municipal tap. It's incredible.
Let's take another call from Fred in St. Petersburg. Hi, Fred. You're on the air.
Hey, Sean. Nice to hear you. Andy, you're really... you're great. I don't know where to start with this phosphate thing. I've been living in Florida for over 75 years, and I used to drive across the state weekly and working, and I saw these mounds out there, and after they get through with the land, and they even advertise on TV how great the land is after they've mined the hell out of it for phosphate. And my opinion is, I don't know how any county commissioner or anybody can control this. How they can approve this phosphate mining in Florida? It's killing our state. It's terrible. I haven't heard anything worthwhile with phosphate mining. I saw them do it in North Carolina, and they just tore parts of that state up where the riverfront was. But anyway, I appreciate your show, and Andy, do any of our state legislatures or county commissioners respond to this kind of a stuff that Mosaic's doing?
Good question, Fred. Thank you.
Yeah, we have a problem with getting the word out. We have a problem with the distortions and the misinformation that Mosaic is so good at. Have basically ensured that there's a generation of legislators and local politicians who drank the Kool-Aid. My job and the job of my colleagues, of whom there are increasingly many, is to redirect that misinformation with something resembling facts, and we're trying to get the word out. You know, phosphate mining thrives in the darkness like a mushroom. It's just it requires secrecy, it requires darkness, and it requires the complicit aid of the agencies who are supposed to be protecting us.
Well, thanks for that call, Fred. If you'd like to join the conversation, the best way right now might be email dj@wmnf.org. And I want to try to go to Rod in Largo. Hi, Rod.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. What's your question?
I agree with them 100%. These huge polluters like Mosaic, it used to be Cargill, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
When they had the problems back then and then changed the name, you know, and I get a kick. These companies, them, DuPont, the glyphosate thing, these companies have been allowed to pollute not just the United States, but the entire world. Get away with it and leave the cleanups to the taxpayers. It's ridiculous. And then, you know, I see these ridiculous commercials that they run on TV about saving the scrub jays and how great they are as stewards of the environment. And it kills me why. And I know why they get away with it, because of the politicians that they pay off and put in there, you know, and they just, I don't understand how they get away with it. They should be shut down and made to clean up the pollution that they cause.
Rod, thanks so much for that. Let's see if Andy can answer quickly as we end the show.
Boy, I couldn't agree with you more, Rod. There have been something like 28 major, major spills since the 1950s. One ecological disaster after another. Mosaic is turning the heartland of Florida into a banana republic. I call it corporate colonialism. It's just got to stop.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on Midpoint Monday, Andy.
Thanks for having me.
Andy Mele is with Suncoast Waterkeepers, and the open house public meeting is next Monday, September 30th, from 4 until 7 in the afternoon at the Mulberry Civic Center. That's at 901 Northeast 5th Street in Mulberry, where the permit will be up for discussion. I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted. If you didn't get a chance and you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, give me a call at 813-238-8001, extension 114. I'll play your message next show. If you missed any of the show, you can watch it on Facebook at WMNF News and at WMNF.org. Thanks to Blanny Whalen, Alvaro Montealegre, and Frank Knox. Stay tuned now for Latino 54 on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg,